Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, a very goodly evening to you.
Goodly evening, Andrew. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just opening the window here because it's really hot in my office. The sun is shining at the back of the house, and it's been amazing here. Amazing weather here in Dublin for the last few days. And yeah, I'm good. I'm good. What about you?
I'm good. I'm in Romford. Home of, well, Ray Parlour, among others.
Famous social club, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm actually firmly in West Ham territory here. It's interesting because, obviously, to most of us, the Europa Conference League final, is that even what it's called? I can't be sure. I think so. Is entirely, I'm going to say, meaningless, or certainly without much consequence. But here in Romford, there are West Ham flags in shops and car windows and outside houses ahead of Wednesday night's final. And of course, Declan Rice's farewell before his impending certain move to Arsenal.
Yeah, I was just looking it up. It's being played in Prague. Should be a good town for all the West Ham and Fiorentina fans to hang out in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you're a West Ham fan, presumably that's pretty glamorous. A European final in Prague against Fiorentina feels like a sort of, you know, 90s throwback as well, to see Fiorentina in a European final.
Yeah, it does a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah, Batistuta and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to ask you about this actually at one point, but you know, the inconvenience perhaps of this UEFA Europa Conference League final, you know, for being a slight obstacle in the Declan Rice, the pursuit of Declan Rice. And we had some, we actually had a question. Let me see, maybe it was on Twitter or it could have been on the Discord. I've just got them here. Let me see. I can never find these. Oh, yeah, here it is. I've got it. It comes from Arteta Inn. That guy's really fucking...
This is his time.
Yeah, he's really nailing his colours to the mast here. He's at Biscuits and Gaby on Twitter. And he said, in terms of... hello, guys, he says, in terms of moving on with deals and our transfer business, would you rather Declan Rice and West Ham win the Europa Conference League final or lose it? Thanks.
I don't think the outcome of the final, the result, will make a dramatic difference to Arsenal's business. I accept that the final being when it is a little bit of a hurdle. I mean, it'll be played on June the 7th, which doesn't feel right, does it?
It's a bit nonsense. That is a bit nonsensical, you know, given the way... Finals are supposed to be, I will admit here, I forgot about the FA Cup final at the weekend, but we might talk about that. But yeah, June 7th feels late. It does feel late given
the players. I think it was the first FA Cup final to be played in June. Presumably this is all a knock-on effect from the Winter World Cup.
Of course.
But I think win or lose, I don't think it's going to make a difference really for Arsenal regarding Rice and West Ham. But... you know, I think I would imagine the player himself would ideally like things to not, you know, step up or become too intense in terms of negotiations between clubs until that final is out the way, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, do you worry a little bit about the old Thierry Henry Barcelona situation, you know, where he stayed for one more year out of guilt?
That.
Because we lost the final, and I think I think if we had won that final against Barcelona, he would have left. You know, going out on a bit of a high. That's just my own personal opinion. I don't think it will make a difference. But if you were to ask me right now, let's see West Ham win it. Let's see West Ham win it. Let's see Declan Rice, if he is going to come to Arsenal, come you know, feeling like perhaps, you know, his work at West Ham is done. My work here is done. And now I must go to North London because there's work to do there. You know, that kind of way.
Do you not worry that, you know, a West Ham win, the image of Declan Rice lifting that trophy will be seen by other suitors and stack a few million quid on top of West Ham's already lofty asking price?
Not really. I mean, I think, you know, he's a good player, so big teams are going to be interested in good players anyway. West Ham, it doesn't feel to me like they're going to just sort of say, ah, here, we've won the thing, you have him for, you know, knockdown price or anything like that. I, you know, unless he sort of scores a hat-trick in the final or something, I don't think it's going to add too many millions to the fee that they would already be looking for.
No, no. I agree. But obviously, I think it is a bit of a barrier to negotiations really intensifying until that's out of the way. So you missed the FA Cup final.
I did. Completely missed it. I forgot it was even on. Someone sent me a text. My friend Nigel sent me a text on Saturday saying, thanks for not mentioning the FA Cup final in your blog. I can't even begin to think about that confest of a game. And I replied, well, it wasn't deliberate. It was not a deliberate omission. I had completely forgotten that the game was on.
Well, I mean, good for you. I think that's probably a lovely way to experience the FA Cup final. I actually watched it in full.
Right.
Did you have a preference?
I mean, you know what happened? On Saturday afternoon, I told you here the weather was good. Beautiful sunny day. I had made pizza dough in the morning, so I was going to make pizzas out in the back garden in the evening, in the afternoon, evening, and have a couple of beers and all the rest. So I had to go around to the supermarket to get a few bits and bobs, a few beers in and everything else. And there's a young lad there who works at the checkout. He's a really nice young man. He really is. And I said to him, how are you? And he said, oh, I'm a bit nervous. I'm actually really, really nervous. And I said, FA Cup final, is it? And he went, yeah. I said, I'm a big Man United fan and I'm going to take my break at 3. I'm only going to get to see the first half, but I'm so nervous. I'm like bricking it, you know. And I sort of felt so bad for him that I wanted United to win in a weird way. But it was very much a case of I couldn't give a fuck. Beyond that, once I got over that little bit with the guy in the supermarket, I was like, I just do not care.
I did a poll on Twitter.
Right.
Of my followers. And 81.5% said they would prefer City to win. Just 18.5% for United. Yeah, it's pretty
emphatic. Why do you think that is? I mean, do you think that's because, you know, we obviously have a history with Manchester United and all the rest of it. You know, is it a case that, like, people can just look at a Manchester City trophy win and go, yeah, well, who gives a fuck about that? Like, I don't care. We all know why they've won it, da-da-da. Or is it a case that they might harbour some feelings from that time when we were rivals at Manchester United and their supreme achievement, which, you know, came at some cost to us, right? The treble came at some cost to us. When you think about that FA Cup semi-final and Dennis Bergkamp missing the penalty and, oh, the Giggs goal. Why didn't Lee Dixon just kick him in the fucking leg?
Yeah. No one ever asked Lee that, apparently.
Never. do you think there was an element of that?
I think so. I think people who lived through that rivalry with Sir Alex Ferguson carry a lot of scars from that. I also think a few people said, and we may come to this, well, I want City to win because then we'll be in the Community Shield. I do wonder if the rest of it is just people who, you know, much like there were many neutrals or fans of rival clubs, is maybe a better way of putting it, who wanted City to win the league this season, because I think a lot of people feel that City's triumphs don't register in the same way as other clubs do.
They're meaningless in the grand scheme of things. Because
And also they're probably all going to be stripped away once they get found guilty of breaching all these rules. So I think that's a big part of it. And I get it. You know, I wanted City to win because I didn't want to see United. I didn't want to see Bruno Fernandes happy. I didn't want to read a load of, you know, big pieces about how Ten Hag has restored United to their rightful position. I didn't want to hear United fans telling me they had a better season than us because they'd won two trophies. You know, I just thought,
sure,
City, it's just another notch, isn't it? It's just another trophy with that big asterisk against it that in a long line. And it's sad. It's sad, but it sort of ceases to mean anything after a certain point.
Well, what did you make of the game? Because I saw very quickly that the City were 1-0 up, the quickest goal in FA Cup final history from Ilkay Gundogan.
Not a bad goal.
No, not bad to open the scoring in an FA Cup final. I mean, wasn't the other quickest one Roberto Di Matteo? Was that the other
it
one?
It was.
And that was a really good goal.
I was actually in the stadium for that.
Right.
With my Chelsea supporting family, I tagged along for the day.
I'm glad that you took I'm glad you took a ticket away from a real Chelsea fan.
So am I. So am
Fuck
I.
Fuck them.
Pure plastic.
Yes.
But that was surpassed a few years ago. Actually, a goal against Chelsea. Louis Sahar of Everton scored, I think, after about 16 seconds or so.
Wow.
So that had overtaken Di Matteo. I also said, I texted my brother, the Chelsea fan, saying, City have even bought Di Matteo's record. And he said, we actually lost that years ago.
Oh.
We played in the game. But Louis Sahar scored against Petr Cech of Chelsea.
But then I presume Chelsea went on to win the cup, did they?
I think they did. I feel like it was one of those finals where Drogba just, you know, turned it round.
Mm.
We were on the end of a couple of those, I recall. But basically, this goal, Gundogan beat them all, and what a strike. And then United got the most absurd penalty decision. Yes. Have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah, I saw it.
Thoughts on that?
Bullshit. I mean, just nonsense. I mean, look, on the one hand, anything bad that happens to Manchester City, I am here for. They deserve it and more, and double that again, right? Mm. But that's nonsense. That just can't be a penalty. It can't.
I found it so interesting. I think every professional who, like ex-pro basically, who I've seen on TV or who I follow on social media, they were pretty much uniform across the board that can't be a penalty. Even if within the letter of the law, it currently is.
Yeah.
That is a terrible oversight that needs to be.
Actually, that's the rules. And, it turns out that is a penalty by the letter of the rule. I mean, fuck off. Please.
Yeah. I thought it was so crazy that, you know, when they call the referee over to look at it, I genuinely thought he might look at it and go, I can't give that as a penalty. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But obviously he went with the VAR and I guess with the wording of the law. I even take some issue with that. I had a look at the law. I'm not sure I buy that's an offence under the law as it stands even. So yeah, United got back into the game through that, and that was basically all they'd offered in the entire first half.
Mm-hmm.
But then City went out and scored again. Gundogan with another volley from the edge of the box. And I think David De Gea is still going down. He's still trying to get down to that one.
Please, a 5-year deal for David De Gea, Manchester
Make
United.
Make it six,
don't
Andrew.
Mind. Six, eight. Get the full Mudrick into De Gea, if you ask me.
Please.
I mean,
please.
I'm
He's
sorry.
He's so loathed by Manchester United fans at the moment. I just desperately hope
may,
they extend his
May contract. I ask a question, though? Because, you know, I saw a bit of it afterwards, right? Like I said, I didn't watch it. I preferred to eat pizza. I actually made an amazing sandwich out of pizza dough as well, which is well worth your time if you can figure that out.
That does sound good.
It does. You just get it like a slightly smaller than a pizza bit and you puff it up in the pizza oven, slice it in half, and then you fill it with whatever you want to fill it with. And it's fucking good, let me tell you. But I did see this afterwards. And they have a corner, and lurking on the edge of the box is the man who scores from the edge of the box, Ilkay Gundogan. This is what he does. and not a single Manchester United player went anywhere near him. Why?
What they preferred to do, actually, was stand directly in front of their goalkeeper, preventing him having any sight on the ball.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was an intriguing strategy they deployed from that corner kick. And lo and behold, they lost the game. And I think it's fair to say that 2-1 flattered United. Did it finish 2-1? I think it did.
It did.
Maybe City scored again.
No. 2-1. 2-1. I saw that much.
So, yeah. So, there you go. City get the second part of their treble.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think as well. Sorry, I should have factored that into why people wanted to see United lose so much. I think there is a relish that the treble is about to be matched by Manchester City, whereas the Invincibles, because that was always the debate, the treble versus the Invincibles, if that happens, will remain a kind of unique achievement, maybe one of the only remaining unique achievements in this league.
Yeah, it's better anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, it's gold. Ours is gold.
Yeah, and theirs is not. You know? I mean, look, it's good. Theirs is good. We're not saying it's not good, but it's not as good as that. Well, look, you know, Manchester derby in an FA Cup final, you would expect some blood and thunder. It doesn't seem like there was an awful lot of that in the game either.
No, I mean, obviously Casemiro put in a tackle in the first 20 minutes he should have been sent off for and didn't even get a booking.
How did he?
But, you know, that's a regular occurrence, nothing to remark.
But he's always getting sent off. He got sent off about 5 times this season, no?
Yeah, he should have been. What's incredible is that he should have been sent off about twice as many times. I don't know what he's up to. In Spain, apparently, he was renowned for these very dangerous challenges, but because he was with Real Madrid, he got away with quite a lot. And I think, you know, Manchester United have a similar kind of insulation against some of this stuff. But even the Premier League referees have had to send him off from time to time. But not at Wembley. They wouldn't dare.
Not at Wembley. I mean, thoughts on what this means then? Community Shield, which, you know, I feel like I could have done without the Community Shield.
Yeah.
I feel like as punishment for losing the FA Cup final, Manchester United should be made play in the Community Shield.
Against Man City
Manchester City again.
I mean, we won it, of course, didn't we, in 2020 in an empty stadium, I believe, against Liverpool. And
do you know what? When you say that, I cannot remember that game.
Yeah.
Not a single bit of it. Aubameyang
scored an Aubameyang goal. Ainsley Maitland-Niles shone as a left wing back.
Right. Was that not the FA Cup final, no? Or was it the same shit in that?
Well, it was basically the same thing. We played a back three, I think. We played the system that had won the FA Cup and beat Liverpool, as I recall. I just remember Mikel Arteta holding that big shield aloft.
Oh, no, that's Carabao Cup. Okay, I'm just trying to...
you got genuinely no recollection of this?
Literally none. Literally
well, I think
none.
That's probably the COVID era, probably all just blending into one somewhat for you. Let's see. Arsenal-Liverpool Community Shield. 2020 Community Shield. It was 1-1. Aubameyang scored early on and Minamino equalised for Liverpool.
Minamino?
Yeah. And Arsenal won on penalties.
Did Maitland-Niles take one of his good penalties?
He did. We scored all 5 penalties. Reece Nelson, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Cedric Suarez, David Luiz.
Sure it wasn't a cross?
Weirdly, he started his run up on the right wing. And David Luiz and Aubameyang with the 5th penalty to seal it. This was in the era, lest we forget, when Aubameyang could do no wrong. On the eve of what would be quite a disastrous first half of the season.
Yes. I mean, the Arsenal team that day, I've just looked it up. Emi Martinez, Rob Holding, David Luiz, Kieran Tierney, Hector Bellerin, Mohamed Elneny, Granit Xhaka, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Bukayo Saka, Eddie Nketiah and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Yeah. Suarez, Kolasinac, Willock and Nelson came on.
Wow. Still don't
remember. It's another time.
It sure is. It feels like a long time ago. Not just 3 years or whatever it is.
And Emi Martinez played. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But then I think when the league started, I think by then Leno came back in immediately.
Yeah, because when did he join? He must have joined Villa then pretty...
It was pretty soon after that, but I seem to remember that Leno got the nod against Fulham on the opening day and gave that interview where he was like, I was always the number one, I am the number one, and I will be the number one.
Yeah, not for long, pal.
No, for a season.
Yeah, when you see what happens down the line. Yeah.
But, yeah, so we won that, but it did set us out on a, as I say, a pretty ropey first half of the season. So, I don't know. Who knows? Listen, it's one of those where if you lose it, it's a completely meaningless game. And if we win it, we will party on the streets of North London.
Yeah. The power has shifted completely.
Exactly.
Yes.
We could, because there's some talk that there may be an Emirates Cup, maybe like a one Emirates Cup game. So we could potentially win two pieces of silverware before the season has even kicked off.
Oh, really? I didn't realise that there was an Emirates Cup game because they're playing Barcelona in Los Angeles on the 26th, is it? Yeah, the 26th of July.
Yes, and then the whatchamacallit, Community Shield.
Is on the 6th of August.
6th of August, yeah. And there's some talk that there may be a midweek Emirates Cup, but it's nothing confirmed.
Well, the 26th is a Wednesday,
yeah,
which means they would have to probably play that game on the weekend, which means Josh is going to have to pay for fucking business class for all the boys to come back from Los Angeles on a Wednesday, maybe a Thursday, and then play on a Saturday. Business class plus.
I don't know about you, but one thing I love to do after getting off an 11-hour flight is play football.
Yeah, just 2 days later. I love that.
Yeah, I love to do
particularly
that.
When you're going the other side. Like, whatever about going from this side of the Atlantic to that side, doing it the other way around is where the real jet lag happens. You know?
Yeah, that could be an interesting game. If it happens. As I say, these are just rumours, yeah, unconfirmed.
We're waiting to see who we're going to play.
Think of the silverware, Andrew.
Boreham Wood, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Get Boreham Wood along. Lift another trophy. Yeah, just to get us in the mood.
You know? Exactly. You know, winning is a habit. Trophies are a habit. Get a few under your belt before the season starts. Job is oxo.
That's the real treble. Emirates Community Shield Carabao. That's what we're going for next season.
Yeah, you can stick your other trebles right up your ass. What else is going on? Is there anything else going on?
It's Kieran Tierney's birthday, Andrew.
We had a question. Zach.
I know.
Zach Taze said, as it's Katie's birthday today, what is your favourite moment of him in an Arsenal shirt?
I like the goal against West Brom.
You just picked the thing that I was going to say, because that's the only thing I can...
Was it snowing that
day?
Yeah,
I think so.
And obviously he was playing naked in the snow.
Yeah.
And he insisted. He wore only a Tesco bag strapped around his nether regions. And that was a brilliant goal. He was great that day. And a right foot top corner strike.
Right foot shot. I remember us being good that day after you mentioned that period of that season in 2020 when we were not good. And we were very not good. But then we sort of got our shit together where the Smith came in and things started happening. And certainly Bukayo Saka scored that day, I think. But the Tierney goal was very good.
I think Smith Rowe put one on a plate for Saka, didn't he? After a really lovely move. It was that or the other way around. I can't remember. But that was my favourite Tierney moment. Does anything else stand out for you?
I mean, there's got to be loads considering how many games he's played. And
I think that I know what my Kieran Tierney low point was as well, if you're interested.
Was it the shoulder injury?
Oh, that would be fair. But no, it was the game away to Spurs, the 36 crosses game, where it just seemed like we had absolutely no idea how to attack other than Kieran Tierney getting to the byline and swinging in crosses to nobody.
We collapsed him, did we?
Yeah, it was kind of like the nadir of our we've forgotten how to play football period. But yeah, the West Brom goal is a happier memory. Happy birthday, Kieran
Happy
Tierney.
Birthday, Kieran Tierney.
I marked his birthday in the time-honoured fashion by making a video about how much money we might be able to sell him for.
This is football. This is football
it's
heritage.
It's a cruel industry. It's a very cruel
industry.
I feel
bad now, you know, that I don't have another, like, favourite Kieran Tierney moment, because there are some other goals that he scored for us and all the rest, but I think that speaks more to my memory than it does to Kieran Tierney's contribution.
Well, you don't remember the Community Shield win even happened. So yeah. I don't think Kieran Tierney should be too offended.
No, I don't think he will be. I don't think he will be. I think just...
You'd have to say some of his performances in that cup run that got us to that Community Shield when he was playing a hybrid role, mm-hmm. one of the early hybrid roles as a kind of left-back / centre-back. He was very good in those games.
No, I agree. And I think it's just, you know, probably the fact that he came in and was an actual left back, you know, after we had some struggles in that position. I think that just that, the very essence of him as a left back. He did score a good goal in Europe, didn't he?
This season, yeah, he did.
Not this season, a couple of seasons ago. Remember him scoring one against someone.
I think he scored one this season where he was just very grumpy. And he, like, just kicked the ball in the net, like, arrived. Maybe it was away in Portugal, something. I don't know. One of those Europa games.
Zurich. FC Zurich.
Was that the one?
Yes.
He just smashed it in very grumpily, turned around, got back on with his... Removed another layer of clothing in celebration.
Yeah, yeah.
And got on with his...
He just was... He had no skin on at all. It was just his organs. Just the organs on the outside.
His debut, actually. I think his debut was in the League Cup, maybe against Nottingham Forest.
Because he had a bit of an injury, didn't he, when he came?
He had an injury. Yes, it was Nottingham Forest. And Arsenal won 5-0. And I remember watching that game and being very excited about it because he was just sort of doing that kick and run thing on the touchline where he would just knock it past somebody and accelerate beyond them. And swing a ball into the box, and it was at that time a new dimension for our play. It's weird. I've said this before, but I do think that maybe more so than any individual player, Kieran Tierney tracks the evolution of Mikel Arteta's Arsenal teams in the way in which he has been featured or has been integral to our tactical setup or has not been at various points. Like he was incredibly important initially in that sort of back three role, then as the overlapping fullback, the fifth lane of attack. And then the side has slowly evolved beyond him to the point where, you know, there were times this season where he wasn't even the second choice left back. You know, we saw the likes of Tomiyasu and Kivior playing there.
Yeah.
As well as Zinchenko, obviously. So it's just been a really interesting, undulating journey for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing those Kivior appearances at the end of the season were sort of a trial run on the basis that everyone more or less accepts that Kieran Tierney is going to be going somewhere else. So rather than give him testimonial appearances, if you like, they're looking at Kivior in that position and thinking, okay, what can he do? How can we do it? What do we need to do if he plays there, et cetera, et cetera?
I think that's fair. But I still think the selection of Tomiyasu ahead of him earlier in the season
was
probably one of the moments where Kieran Tierney thought, I might need to think about going somewhere else.
I've got to get closer to home. If only there was a club closer to home that was awash with billions and billions of pounds that could probably afford to buy me for the £50 million that I'm going to cost. We'll see. We'll see on the fee with that one.
Let's just keep saying 50 million. And then...
Yeah, why not? We might just convince Newcastle that's what they have to pay.
Shakhtar did it. with Mudrick, if we just talk about a crazy number long enough, someone will pay it.
Well, I mean, you know, they did the whole, well, if Antony cost 80 million, Mudrick should cost 100 million.
That's true.
Can we not do that? Can we not do, I mean, do we have an example of, you know, I know there are some out there, but maybe that's just what we should try and do as a negotiating tactic. Who else is going to be in for Kieran Tierney? I saw some talk of Aston Villa, which just felt a bit like media putting two and two together because he'd, you know, he'd worked with Unai Emery. But
Emery launches sure. raid for Kolasinac. Yeah, just like getting the band back together.
How much would you bet that Guendouzi ends up at Aston Villa this summer? Would not surprise me.
No, I think there was that. I think they were tried to do it in January actually, and there is also some talk of West Ham potentially looking at him as a Declan Rice replacement.
Well, the very best of luck to them with that, is what I say.
Okay. But it would be interesting anyway. Listen, we know he's professed his love for Unai. So did you notice on the subject of Unai Emery and Aston Villa, obviously they got into Europe, right? At the expense of...
I wonder who.
Various teams. Spurs, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yep. Very fun. Enjoyable. But I don't know if you noticed that Douglas Luiz, who we tried to buy in August, whatever it was, at the start of the season, under Unai Emery, his form went completely crazy. Like
he scored loads of goals, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he became this like extraordinary goal-scoring midfield player, sort of almost from nowhere. And it made me think, because I was always pretty... like uninspired maybe by him as a potential signing. It was like very much a case of like, yeah, I suppose that
sure.
would do. You know, but he really took off.
When did Emery join Villa?
Good question. Emery joins Villa. Let's have a look. It was October.
October,
so
okay.
How is that? End of October.
All right, so under Unai Emery, he scored 5 goals in, let me go back to October, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I mean, like about 22 games or something like that.
Yeah, and in a similar period, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 assists in the league.
Oh, wow, okay.
So he actually ended the season as like one of the most productive midfield players in the division, which is kind of crazy. But there you go.
Maybe there was something in the in what we were looking at there.
Maybe we knew.
Maybe we knew.
They saw something in Douglas Luiz that, frankly, I did not. Who would think that these professional coaches and scouts would know more than me?
I don't think that anyway. That's fine. You know.
Thank you.
Let's see what sort of question we might have. Okay, here's one from Dancing Bear on the Discord. He says, which of the loan players do you think will come back and be integrated into the first team squad? I have a weird feeling it might be Nicolas Pepe. What do you think?
Wow. That would be weird.
Hmm.
Although when I look at the list, I mean, there's not really anyone else. My answer is kind of none of them, to be honest with you.
Mm.
I think if the club get their way, none of them will. I'm looking at the first team squad page now and the on loan section tucked away beneath the forwards. So there's a couple of keepers, Alex Runnison and Arthur Okonkwo. I think there's a chance that Okonkwo might be the third choice next season. I believe Carl Hein is going to go out on loan.
Right.
But I had been led to believe that they might look to bring in somebody more experienced to be the third choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of these big clubs do these days.
Get your Mark Pooms in and just fucking
Scott
relax.
Scott Carson's about to win the treble, genuinely. and I think that Arsenal made inquiries over a sort of a couple of keepers of similar profile, you know, experienced veterans who would sort of just be an emergency stopgap.
Sure.
I know losing your first two goalkeepers is pretty unlikely, but if it does happen, I think throwing a very inexperienced guy into a potential Champions League quarterfinal or something is generally best avoided.
Yes, I would agree.
So we shall see. But I don't think either of them necessarily. Cedric?
Mm-mm.
No. But it relies on someone taking him. And he didn't set the world alight at Fulham. So
yeah.
Nuno Tavares, I don't see that happening. For all the fun he brings to the fair. He's a Catherine wheel of a footballer. But
all of a sudden the Catherine wheel has gone skidding off the fence post that it's been nailed to, and it's fucking burning the faces of 9 children who've just been brought from the orphanage to look at the fireworks, children. Ah!
Apparently Marseille aren't too convinced about keeping him. So I'll be intrigued to see what happens there. Pablo Marie, we hear, that's going to happen, right?
Like
they stayed up, so he'll be gone.
Yes, there was a clause, I think an obligation, if they had avoided relegation, that Monza would then buy him for a set fee, I think around 6 million.
And he seems happy and he seems healthy. And given what happened to him earlier in the season, that's all good news. Austin Trusty, we periodically get questions from our American listeners about Austin Trusty and whether or not he's going to be integrated with Arsenal. I understand he was Birmingham's player of the year at centre back, but I still think probably the leap is too great for him. So I it wouldn't surprise me if they brought him on the US tour, you know, and he did a load of press and featured a bit there, but I don't think I see him being part of the first.
Do you know who was Birmingham player of the year in 2008?
Was it Nicholas Bentner?
No. Seb Larsson.
Seb Larsson.
Mm.
We sent a few there. Fabrice Mbeumo went down there as well, of course.
Yeah. I mean, he's in an esteemed list with players like Robbie Savage, Jeff Horsfield. And
so this is some serious football heritage we're talking about.
Yeah, John Terrell, formerly of this neighbourhood as well.
Sent a few players to Birmingham over the years, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Done. He's gone anyway.
Done. I believe he is actually was invited to the club to say his farewells towards the end of the season. So that was sort of a nice touch and a marker for a guy who's been with us for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Lokonga, or Sambi, as he's sometimes known. I don't think he'll be back. I really don't.
Do you think we'll sell or loan?
Yeah. He basically didn't really feature very much after Roy Hodgson came in. He was obviously a Patrick Vieira signing at Palace. And, didn't really get much of a look in under Hodgson. So I don't think he'll be staying there. But I'm sure there'll be someone in France who'll take him.
Burnley? Vincent Kompany?
That would be an interesting one. That would be an interesting reunion. It's almost tempting to do that, depending on his contractual situation, to do that as a loan, you know, and see how he does with a full season of Premier League football. And then you've got the forwards. So Marquinhos, I think it'll be another loan for him, probably.
Yeah, I agree.
Balogun, I think will be sold.
Probably, yes. But I think of all the players that are in that list of loan players, if you were to pick one who could potentially make a first team, if not breakthrough, but be part of the first team squad, I think he's probably the one I would choose because, you know, as we've gone through all the others, it doesn't seem likely that they're going to be involved.
Well, the final name is Pepe. The question said they had a sneaky suspicion for Pepe.
They said a weird feeling, and I think that's probably right. They could have been out in the sun a little too long.
I mean, do you think there's any risk that Arsenal can't sell Pepe?
Oh, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be difficult to sell Pepe because he got 8 goals and an assist in Liga, and Balogun has got 20-odd goals and Lacazette's got 20-something goals. So by your mates shall you be judged, as they say in the Bible. And I think Pepe's numbers are pretty underwhelming, to be honest. I think it's going to be difficult to sell him or loan him or find somewhere to take him, even though I think it might be one of those that we incentivize, if that's the right way of putting it. but I really don't believe there's any way that Mikel Arteta would want him back.
I think it's the final year
yeah.
of his contract, potentially.
Yeah.
Last chance to get something for him.
Well, I mean, if they get something that's, you know, reasonable, fair play, but I think this, you know, it's going to be really difficult. I mean, they couldn't do it last year. Yeah. And
I think anything's better than nothing in this situation.
I agree.
You know? If we can get a fee for him, I think he'll probably be let go. But yeah, I can only see him staying at Arsenal if it's one of those where, like, literally we can't.
We can't get, yeah. We can't say.
So there you go. That's the loanees.
There's another one slightly similar. Laguna Grumpy says, hey, gents, a lot of talk on incomings, but do you see anyone in the academy? And he also mentions on loan, but let's not talk about the on loan because we've just done that. Do you see anyone in the academy having a more prominent role next season?
Well, yeah, I suppose. I mean, there are a bunch of players out on loan in the academy who we didn't mention. So that's names like Charlie Patino, you know, Brooke Norton Cuffey.
Is it time for Matt Smith?
Matt Smith.
FA Cup winner, Matt Smith.
Yeah, he is. Miguel Aziz as well. Remember, there was a lot of excitement about Miguel Aziz at one time, Omar Rakik. I'm not sure. I mean, Charlie Patino obviously had a decent season at Blackpool, very highly thought of. It seems he wants to go and play elsewhere, which I'd sort of file under the Balogun one, where for me it's like, I'm fine with it. I just want Arsenal to protect themselves, you know, put the right clauses in those deals that if they turn out to be absolute worldly talents, we don't look foolish. And maybe even we have a chance to get him back. That would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting aspect of, like, let's say, you know, the Patino deal. And I think there's good reasons for him wanting to go somewhere else to play, because we've talked about this, right? As the level rises, it becomes more difficult as an academy player to make your way into the first team, right?
Yeah.
But if you deal with a player in that circumstance who you think, look, this is a good young player, but, you know, he's going to need a couple of years before he can really start to challenge for a first team place with us. If you say to him, well, you know, we're not going to sell you because we think you could be good. Maybe if you put the right clause in and you facilitate the move that he wants, it means that that door is not shut. You don't burn your bridges with the player if in 2 years' time you have a buyback clause or a first option or whatever it might be, and this guy is like, okay, he's got 2 years under his belt, he's really developed well, we have a chance potentially to bring him back, and he feels like, hey, you know what, I am where I am now because Arsenal allowed me to go.
Yeah, and you don't get into the situation we had with someone like Ainsley Maitland-Niles, for example, where, you know, we dug our heels in and kept him and didn't really use him. Let him go, but let's put a buyback in if we can. So, you know, if he turns out to be the player, he certainly has the potential to be. I mean, he's got a ton of ability. We can press the button a couple of years down the line. Sure. I think it makes a ton of sense. And I'd say the same regarding Balogun. And also, given these boys' extensive history with Arsenal, and given the fact that we are where we are at this point in time and we're a club on the up, I don't see them necessarily being resistant to that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably quite attractive and quite smart in terms of the market. So
yeah,
that would be my hope. And, you know, sell on clauses as well if we choose to not activate those buybacks and they go on to play elsewhere or make another big move.
Yeah.
But looking at this list, no, I don't see it. I mean, I think there might be young players who we sign. You know, we might sign a 19 or 20-year-old who Mikel Arteta thinks the world of, who could come into the first team squad straight away. I think, you know, they're looking at a couple of South American talents as they did last summer with Marquinhos. I think there's another two or three players of interest to Edu and his team that could be, you know, the new Martinelli, potentially one of those guys who gets a chance in pre-season and goes on and does well. But I don't see someone coming out of the academy. Do you?
It's difficult. Like I said, the level has gone up, you know, and it's going to be more difficult for these guys to make a breakthrough. And, you know, there's some good names, people like Koja Dubery, Rule Walters, who are sort of on the fringes, Mara Bandera, you know, so they're there, but it just depends on what else we do and who else might go and what space there might be for one or two of those to make their breakthrough. But it really does become more difficult as you're a team that... your ambitions and your aims for the season are much higher. It's just so tough for these young guys to break through. So,
yeah,
you just don't know, though. That's the thing. You just do not know with young players. One of them might come in and, you know, just storm it up in preseason. You saw Brook Norton Cuffey, for example, had a good season on loan. I know he had two teams, didn't he? Ended up at Coventry. I can't remember where he went first. You know, depending on what we do at right back, who knows where there might be a little bit of space. But I am extremely excited now by the idea of a new Martinelli, because I've grown tired of the old Martinelli.
Fatigued.
Just, I've had enough of him. You know, he's just taking the piss.
Well, he might be the new Martinelli, or he might be the new Marquinhos. We never know. But yeah, certainly I think there are a couple of, you know, young Brazilian prospects that Arsenal are among the teams fighting for. So
right.
That could be interesting. I mean, the other one who's a massive talent, which we didn't mention, is Lino Sousa, who's mm-hmm. really well thought of. And potentially there is actually a gap in the squad.
At left back. Yeah.
He's 18 years old. I don't know. I mean, the boy at City, Rico Lewis, has come in and done a terrific job. And he's 18 as well. I do think the club think really highly of Lino Sousa and see him as a first team player potentially one day. I just don't know if we'll promote him to that position in the squad quite yet. I wonder if there might be a loan before that.
Step. I mean, what I would say is that, you know, when you think about the decision making that Mikel Arteta makes, if he said like one of these young guys was going to be part of the squad next season, you would trust his judgment in that regard, because he does not want, and has shown on more than one occasion, he does not want to bring young players into the team before he feels they are ready, whether that's physically, mentally, technically, whatever it might be, that if somebody does get the nod, if someone gets to, right, you're with us now, and you're in the squad for most of the season, I would absolutely trust Arteta's judgment on that.
Yes, I think that's fair. And also the other thing to say is, these things aren't easy to predict. There are lots of names we didn't mention there. Nobody would have called Alex Iwobi stepping up and playing at the Nou Camp and becoming an Arsenal first team player. So sometimes a guy comes out of the woodwork a bit, or left field rather, we shall see. But I do think Arteta will be hoping to have a big enough squad that he's not relying on teenagers next season.
Yes. Okay. Well, look, we have got 47 minutes into this. So I think what we should do is take a little break, and then we'll come back with some more questions in part two right after this. Sound good?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. Also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. James, let's have a few questions from you to kick off part two.
Okay, let's do this. just subtly just working it in there.
It was a very understated one, though.
Yeah, very honest. I'm just hoping to sort of slip it into people's subconsciousness.
I feel like you pulled out halfway through, kind of.
Right. I had a lot of jokes in my head then. I didn't do any of them.
Good.
So, is Ben, who's at Eastan Ben, asks, is it now time for the transfer predictions?
No.
No.
No, it's not time for the transfer predictions because we need to consider these futuristic I'm thinking of another word for predictions and I can't think of one.
Prognostications, is that one?
That could be one. That could be one. I feel like we need a little bit of time to consider it. And we can only really consider it once we know whether or not Declan Rice has won the Europa League final. Europa
like Conference everyone League. Else in world football, we are waiting for the Europa Conference League
yeah.
final.
How about this, though? We will make a commitment to doing them on next week's show. How's that?
Ooh. I like it. Trailing next week's show.
For sure. This is the big one. You know, where we get our numbers completely and utterly wrong, but in the absence of any evidence of that, because we never remember to go back over them, nobody really knows how bad we are, even though we are terrible.
The only numbers that matter, Andrew, are going to be the listener numbers next week, and they are going to be through the roof. Now that you have expertly trailed next week's show.
Sure.
Okay, well, as soon as we hang up here, I'm going to get to work.
Going to start abacus. Doing it. What do we do? We just predict a total
spend. I've got a big
spend.
Whiteboard like Edu, and I write on it Declan Rice,
Moises Caicedo,
couple of young Brazilian lads,
the new Martinelli,
an old goalkeeper. That's what it says on Edu's London Colney whiteboard.
I mean, it's
the new Martinelli, an old goalkeeper, and Declan Rice. I think what we do is we predict a position and a price point for that position and a total.
Right.
Does that seem reasonable?
I think that's fair. I mean, do we predict who's going to go? Like, who's going to...
Yeah, we do that as well. We say how much we're going to recoup.
Right. We're always really bad at it, though.
So the answer to the original question, is it time... Eastan Ben, is no. But look what you've done. You've created a hook for next week's show.
Thank you so much.
In the absence of football matches, I'd say is frankly necessary.
Yep. Betty's in marketing, actually.
I think he probably is. Okay. What about this then?
Mm.
Here's a question you can't wriggle out of.
Okay.
We had a couple of questions along these lines on the Discord. One was from Dom, I believe, and the other was from Sean. So Dom said, hi, would you take Lavia or Livramento from Southampton, Adams from Leeds or Madison, Tielemans from Leicester? Could they be our next Ramsdale? Offer value in the market and top up the squad with players with experience of a league but room to develop? And similarly, Sean said, with the season completed across Europe, which players would you be willing to consider from Europe's clearance rack? And he suggested Tyler Adams, Sinisterra from Leeds, Harvey Barnes from Leicester, or even Josselu from Espanyol.
Josselu from Espanyol. I had not considered him at all.
What about the Premier League relegated clubs? I was struck. There was a list today of the players Leicester have released or that will be leaving at the end of the season. I was like, wow, there's some, you know, we're going to see a lot of those players, I imagine, in the Premier League next season.
You know what's really funny is when you think back to last summer and pretty much all the smart money, all the smart midfield money was on us signing Yuri Tielemans, right?
I remember.
Right? And now I feel like, geez.
You know who's going for Yuri Tielemans, according to The Athletic, about an hour ago?
Tottenham?
It was Unai.
Unai.
Aston Villa.
I mean,
finally found a one-pace midfielder to replace Steven Nzonzi in his heart.
I mean, it is funny, though, to consider. I saw the Spurs are after Harvey Barnes as well.
Right.
And he's a good player. I like him. I do like him. I'm just not sure he's quite what we need, but I do think he is a good player. But the idea of Tielemans at Arsenal now, like this 12 months ago, you'd have been like, yeah, this guy's technically really good. He scored some amazing goals last season, but I don't think he's got the athleticism to play in this Mikel Arteta team. I just don't see it. I
that was always the worry with him. And in fact, the reservation that a lot of clubs had about him, you know, did he have the fleet of foot, as they say?
You know what it is, though? I do wonder if maybe, like, he's still relatively young, isn't he? Like, he's only 25, is that right?
Yeah.
Yuri Tielemans. He's 26 now.
26.
Right? He has made an extraordinary number of first-team appearances in that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's up to, like, way over 400 and something, which is a lot, 445 for a 26-year-old in Europe as well. I just wonder if the legs, even if they were never that great in the first place, are sort of running on empty a little bit at this point.
Perhaps. I think he's a good player, and I think...
technically excellent. There's no two ways about it, but...
You can't have enough... there's a reason... He's a different type of player, but there's a reason Arsenal have kept renewing Mohamed Elneny and keeping him around for years. You do need bodies in your midfield. If you play with a midfield three, sooner or later, you're going to require that depth. And, I think theoretically, Tielemans could provide some of that. But, I don't see it happening. Just having a think about other relegated players. Leicester, I mean, James Maddison's very well thought of.
No.
Not for you?
No. No.
Okay.
We've already done the whole Madison thing. You know, it was Madison or Odegaard, and there were wars over that.
Culture
and,
wars, yeah, I know, right? Too many wounds from those culture wars.
I was always team Odegaard.
Well, as was I.
Mm. We were right for once. Amazing.
We were right for once. Southampton have got a load of sort of like interesting young players. Yeah, Lavia is one of the ones that people like a lot. There's a buyback for Man City for him, I believe. £40 million clause that they can activate. I think it's this summer. So I guess that would make them favourites there. I think we'll be looking for more sort of senior additions to the midfield than him. But I wouldn't be averse to it. What age is he, Romeo Lavia?
He's only 20, I think.
Yeah, I mean...
we had a question. 19. All right, we had a question from JMart91, who said, "Morning, gents. If we didn't get Caicedo, would Lavia be a good alternative option?"
I think it depends what he's going to be. You know, if he's coming in to play week in, week out, then I'd say he's probably not ready for that in the Champions League. But if he was coming in... because, you know, Elneny was going to be phased out or not really figure with his injury. And we wanted someone who was going to be, you know, a rotation player and pick up minutes in the cups and a development guy, you know, taking on the kind of Sambi Lokonga role within the group. Then, yeah, Why not?
Got the same agent as Bukayo Saka and Eddie Nketiah and Fowler and Balogun.
Well, he's famously easy to deal with, so yeah. I imagine.
Why not?
That deal will be completed without a hiccup. I mean, there's a player I like at Leeds, I have to say, which is Wilfred Nonto. I do really like that guy.
He is kind of fun, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's very small, which is always fun. But he's got that sort of stockiness, that sort of like, I don't know. There's a novelty factor to watching him play, like watching Giovinco. Is that his name, Giovinco?
Giovinco, yeah.
Ever so small. But yeah, very talented, I think. And Arsenal looked at him in some detail when he was playing for Zurich. He was quite well liked, but he ultimately went to Leeds. I think he's a really good pickup for someone already an Italy international, 19 years old, could play all across the front. I like him.
Speaking of agents.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. I saw stories this week about Xavi. Is it Simons or Simons?
Yeah.
Simons? I don't know. Xavi Simons, who's at PSV, who was good against us in the Europa League. PSG have a buyback clause, I think. But it doesn't preclude PSV from dealing with another club if the right offer comes in.
He was brilliant against us. I was there that night, and he was sensational.
He has just changed his agent from Bob Agent to Darren Dean, you know, son of David Dean. I don't know if that makes it any more or less likely that Arsenal might do a deal for this guy. But I have seen him mentioned in dispatches. What do you think about that interest?
Yeah, I don't know anything about it, but he's a player I really like. And you do have to bear in mind, obviously, he's coming out of Holland, where, you know, there's mixed precedent, shall we say, in terms of how players have adapted. Some have done really well.
So. There are more misses than hits, it's fair to say.
More Kesmans than
Suarez's.
Yeah, exactly. Some very evil players, Suarez, Van Nistelrooy.
That's true.
I think of Holland as such a nice country, but they've given us some horrible.
Well, Suarez, of course, he was sort of travelling through to get to.
Of course.
Van Nistelrooy was pure Dutch evil.
That's true. Yeah. I think he's a great player and plays a load of different positions, play basically everywhere. You know, I think he's got that sort of Barcelona schooling of total football and all that. So
might ring some bells for Mikel Arteta, who does like his players to be versatile, doesn't he?
He does. He does. I think that would be an interesting one as well. I don't know about the Darren Dean thing. I mean, I suppose there was a time that would have been of more relevance than it is currently.
Well, only from the point of view that, you know, it would have inevitably meant that player being fucking sold somewhere else, and because he was quite good, so.
We shall see. I was really impressed with him against us, and obviously that's only one game. I'm not watching him all season long, but I gather he's done really well. And on the relegation thing, just to come back to it, I would have no qualms. If there's a player you like, and they're coming from a relegated club, it's a great opportunity, you know. People said when Arsenal signed Ramsdale, he's been relegated twice in a row, and that was really a stick that was used to beat him. But there are good players in the Premier League that go down. It's just a nature of how competitive it is these days.
Yeah, and just, you know, who might be available that fits into the position that you need, you know, to upgrade, for example. Like, I don't want to bring Luke Ayling back. I'm sorry, Luke, you had your time, but...
Theo's on a free, I noticed.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question, by the way? On the subject of transfer rumours. I don't think we had a question about this, but there are a lot of transfer rumours about Tottenham's captain, Harry Kane. Real Madrid seem to be ramping up the marker machine. I think Manchester United have been mentioned. He is under contract with Spurs, and when Spurs don't want to sell a player, they're pretty intransigent about it. But do you like have a perspective on it? Like, would you be happy? Are you hoping Spurs sell Harry Kane?
I feel like maybe Spurs selling Harry Kane could be the most sensible thing they could do in one way, because it would help them, you know, accept that they're in a period where they need to rebuild and not be completely reliant on one player. And I'm not saying they are completely reliant on one player, but when I think you have a player like him as your captain, your figurehead, your center forward, it becomes too much of the focus, right? So I think if they really genuinely want to improve, they should probably sell him.
Yeah.
Whether they do or not, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing if you're the new Spurs manager, the appointment that is causing a lot of angst among our Australian fans, because he's a very, very popular guy down there. And we have a lot of Arsenal fans in Australia who are looking at this going, oh, no, what'd you do that for? Because they really like him, but now he's obviously tainted by association with Tottenham.
I suppose it would be the opportunity to sort of restart things for them.
Well, yes.
We have to hope they go the Gareth Bale route, right? They sell him, lose their best player, and spend all the money on
shitheads.
Eric Lamella and Roberto Soldado.
Yeah,
people like that.
Complete dickheads who do
Paulinho. Not.
Yeah, all of that. I mean, I don't really read too much into... I'd be absolutely staggered if Harry Kane went to Real Madrid. Like, it would be an amazing move for him, but I still would be staggered if he went there, because I think he wants the Premier League goal-scoring record.
Well, obviously, he's never won anything.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if he
stays... That's his one hope.
If he stays at Tottenham... He's never going to win anything, right? We know that. It's the history of the Tottenham. But he could finish his career. Like, yeah, Shearer has 260. He has 213. Like, if United push the boat out for him, I could see him go there. If they really push the boat out for him. But I don't know if United are they that? I mean, that's going to be a lot of money on a guy who's, going to be 30 in a couple of weeks' time?
Well, they did it for Casemiro.
Oh, Jesus, I suppose so. Yeah, maybe there's some precedent there. But I don't see him going to... I don't see him going to Real Madrid. I wouldn't be surprised if he went to Man United if they really pushed. But I would say he's going to stay there because... He's just...
That's his fate.
That's... Yeah, he deserves it. Yeah.
Forever.
What Spurs. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned the great Australian dilemma. We had questions about that, I'm sure. People saying, how the hell do I cope with this?
Yeah.
Because he is a very... Oh, here you go. I don't know how to pronounce your name, good sir, but you're on the Discord... It's Y37IR. As an Australian Arsenal supporter, how should I stop the inner turmoil brought about by wanting an Aussie to do well in the Premier League versus never wanting anything good to happen to Spurs ever?
I mean, you have to prioritise. It's as simple as that.
That's true.
You know, one guy doing well is good for one guy. And it might be good for Australian football fans. But you have to think about the potential misery of tens and hundreds of thousands of Tottenham fans. And that should be your priority. That's the way I look at it. I mean, he seems like a good guy, this fella. I've watched some of his stuff, you know, and you know, he's done a really good job at Celtic. He's done good work elsewhere. I mean, I think it is still a little bit of a... hitting hope in a way.
It's a bit of a pun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Like, you know, I'm not downplaying any of the achievements that he's had in the jobs that he's done, but he's never really, you know, he's 57 and, you know, his career has been in Australia, in Japan, he's done well there, and in Celtic, you know, which, you know, with all due respect to our Scottish pals, is not, the Scottish Premier League is not the most competitive. Brendan Rodgers won a bazillion things at Celtic, didn't he?
Some talk he might go back. I think it's a bit of a gamble. I mean, look, this guy is a proper coach who has actually done the job and done a good job lots of places. It's not like appointing, say, Frank Lampard. But, and he does seem like a good guy. It is sort of weird, isn't it? When Spurs were looking for a manager before, I remember feeling like, oh, I sort of hope Graham Potter doesn't go there because I quite like him and I think he seems like a decent man and a good coach. And he'd sort of dodged that bullet, thankfully, taking a much more explosive bullet at Chelsea. Yeah. But, I mean, someone's got to manage them, haven't they? And my biggest worry is how the scansion of Postecoglou is going to make it very difficult to include in chance Postecoglou.
Well, I mean, that's a small issue that I think we have. But for our Australian...
Actually, it works, I guess.
Yeah, it could do. For our Australian friends, we sympathise and everything else. But, you know, the success of one of your countrymen cannot come before the downfall, the misery, the dismay, the mayhem that Tottenham deserve for simply being Tottenham.
He's had a good career, all you can but say- it is now over.
All you can say is, let's hope he just goes there, comes out the other side, you know, goes for a good long hot shower and gets another good job and does good work there.
I agree.
Okay, here is a question for, this is quite good, from KT. Noting talk around transfer values of 100 million for Rice, 100 million for Caicedo, should Arsenal be looking to compete in this market or focus more attention on the identifying value in the market? And Wise Marklar says, I didn't think I'd ever see talk of Arsenal spending 200 million in a transfer window and the fan base barely bat an eyelid. When does the spending stop, or are we on our way to Europe's top table and this is how things are going to be from now on?
Well, I'm one of the people who isn't convinced that Arsenal will sign both Declan Rice and Caicedo. And maybe isn't convinced Arsenal can do both those things.
I tend to agree with you, but I think I really feel it's one of those where we should if we can, but
it is a lot. I see the value of both. I just listen, I think in the past few summers Arsenal have always, we talk about our sort of doing our net spend or whatever, I think Arsenal comfortably outstripped what I have anticipated them doing in the last two summers. You know, we spend a lot of money, and that's something, you know, that other fans of other teams are quite quick to remind us of, but we really have. And to be fair to the club and to the ownership, you know, that has changed quite dramatically of late. I know there are all sorts of financial reasons that that is the case now. Is it right? I think we sort of are in that place now. Like we, I think it gets to a point where if you really want to compete, that is what you need to do. I mean, to use the example of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, you know, they assembled a team picking up guys like Salah and Mane. I think I sort of said Salah and Mane.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I thought that was good.
Salah.
Yeah. Mane.
Mane, yeah. I just blended them into one in my mind. But then when it came to the crunch, they were like, well, we've got to pay the money to get Alisson and we've got to pay the money to get Van Dijk. And to an extent, I mean, they spent a lot of money on Naby Keita at the time, although that didn't really work
out.
Darwin Nunez. Now they do it regularly. Now they're doing it, you know, fairly frequently, bringing in these top ticket names. I just think that is sort of the nature of the game now. And I think I think we were in a place where we were building out the squad, 20 million here, 30 million there, 50 million on Ben White, you know, building like a base. But now, to put the cherry on the cake, I just think, well, cherries are pretty expensive, basically.
That's no good if you're trying to make a perfect Manhattan.
I know.
You need the cherry.
That's the situation we're in. No, I think...
I agree with you. I mean, I think there is a Premier League level of spending that is obviously there because of, you know, how much Premier League clubs make and generate in revenue. And, you know, it outstrips everybody else in Europe. And that is a factor when it comes to buying players within the Premier League and from outside the Premier League, you know. And the reality is, if you do want the best players cost a lot of money, unless for some reason they are, you know, at the end of a contract or something like that, and you can do the deal in that sense. But, you know, it's very rare that the best players go for free, you know.
I mean, one thing I have to reluctantly give Man City credit for is that while they have made big marquee purchases like Jack Grealish, or I count Erling Haaland in that bracket, even though his transfer fee was apparently so reasonable, you know, the amount of money that's gone into that deal is vastly more than that figure. But they have also made some quite smart, relatively affordable signings. You know, you look at Akanji, you look at Alvarez, who came in for them last season up top. I think you have to do both. But I just think that sometimes there's a key cog or a key piece in the team that means you've got to push the boat out. And I think Arsenal have reached maybe a year or two quicker than they themselves anticipated, have reached that point in their trajectory. I think so.
I mean, I'm really fascinated to see how far they push this summer, because I think if you could make a really, really good argument that if you spend big on Rice and Caicedo this summer, you don't need to touch your midfield for, you know, beyond a little bit of touching up here and there, you know, when the likes of Elneny and Jorginho shift away and Partey shift away, you know, your investment in that area of the pitch covers you for the next 5, 6, 7 years. So if you can sort of justify that outlay now on the basis that we're not going to have to spend that much money in that area of the pitch for quite a long time, it's really worth it. But it's just, you know, how realistic that is based on what else they feel they need to do this summer.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be a pretty spectacular way to, you know, have successes for Xhaka and Thomas Partey. I do just wonder, though, if Rice and Caicedo, I still feel like for me, there would be a piece missing in that midfield in terms of someone who offered a bit more going forward, you know. Maybe the club think Fabio Vieira is that guy, or maybe they think Emil Smith Rowe is that guy.
We had a question about Smith Rowe. Comes from Gabby Gull, who says, now that we know Smith Rowe is staying, what do you make of how Arteta handled him this season?
Really interesting one, isn't it? It's so interesting. We did the live show at the end of the season on the Saturday night, and somebody sent in a question about Emil Smith Rowe's future, and I said that I couldn't really see one for him at Arsenal, given the way he was used. And then on Sunday night, after the Wolves game and all the sort of hullabaloo after that, I discovered that he had been told in no uncertain terms that he was staying at Arsenal. And I was so surprised, really surprised. But maybe I was wrong to be, because...
Were you pleasantly surprised?
Yeah, because I've got a lot of... I mean, partly just purely on a sort of emotional level. You know, I think there's an affection and attachment to Emil Smith Rowe. I think even coldly. I think he's a very talented player. And from what I hear, the coaching staff basically feel that it's fair and right to give him a chance at a season without injury and see what he can do. And I can't argue with that assessment. I think it's good. We need all the talented players we can get, and we have enough wiggle room with his contract to give him that season, you know, and see how he does. And if it doesn't work out, okay, you know, maybe that is it. But I think that he and his representatives would have gone into that meeting possibly anticipating a very different outcome, and maybe even possibly wanting a different outcome because he's not been playing. So in terms of the way he was managed, I think when he was out the team, one of the frustrations was that he didn't really know why, and there wasn't a great deal of communication about the selection and why he wasn't getting these opportunities. but maybe I should. So it's tempting to be like critical of that, but I think it's quite typical of Arteta in some respects. Maybe it's something he didn't feel the need to articulate because it was so evident to him. You know, like maybe he was just like, you just need to show me more.
Do you remember when Arsene Wenger was in charge and there was an element...
I remember that period, yeah.
You remember that? Yeah, it was only a couple of years, I know, but it could pass you by pretty quickly. But that sort of thing feels almost Wenger-esque in that... He would wait for players to work things out for themselves.
Yes, he didn't want to give you the answer.
He didn't want to give you the answer. And it's like, to me, based on what we know now, because similar to you, I was really worried about what was going to happen with Smith Rowe. I was really worried that the fact he wasn't being used was basically evidence that his time at Arsenal was going to come to a close. And I didn't want that because I really like him as a player. He's a very exciting and enjoyable player. Based on what we know now, it feels like the way he was managed was a challenge.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And there have been more explicit challenges from Arteta in press conferences and other public comments about the player. You know, I said this elsewhere, but I wonder if in some ways Smith Rowe finds himself in a not entirely dissimilar situation to the one Granit Xhaka was in a year ago when Arteta said, to be honest, I need X from you if you're going to be an Arsenal player. And Xhaka, by all accounts, came back to training 4 kilos lighter in the shape of his life and had the season of his life. And that may be what Smith Rowe has to do to prove himself to Arteta and regain his place. And I sort of think, so be it, you know. He can't be a promising kid forever. At a certain point, he has to step up and be reliable in the manager's eyes.
Mm.
And I think the physical aspect is a huge component in it, you know. Xhaka came back in great shape, but to be honest, Xhaka's always in pretty good shape and Xhaka can always play. And one of Smith Rowe's big issues is that he can't always play, or certainly until now hasn't always been able to play. And even looking at him, his body type, his body shape, I think has really changed over the past couple of years. And there may be a process of adaptation for him to that, to changing his game. You know, he's a 6 foot guy now and he's quite broadly built, and that might involve some learning, some acclimatization, but it's a huge, huge season in his career because I think given the way last season went, it's no exaggeration to say it's make or break for him now.
No, I agree. I agree, but I'm glad that, you know, this summer, I guess the slate is wiped clean and he has another chance because I think the talent is there. The ability is there. It's just whether or not he can rise to this particular challenge. And I really, really hope that he does.
Yeah.
Here's a question from John Greer, who's at JohnGreer05, who says on Twitter, he says, which current Arsenal player do you think Arteta will repurpose with a new role or a different position next season?
Ooh. I think it will be Kolo Touré as a central midfielder. And Thomas Vermaelen up front.
Thomas Vermaelen as a central midfielder, yeah.
I think... So it can't be something we've already seen.
I mean, Smith Rowe as the eight is an example of...
That's a contender, isn't it?
That is one of the really, big contenders.
We've seen, you know, a little bit of that, but not very much at all. Martinelli up front, some might suggest. Jesus on the wing. We've not seen that.
I think that could be one that
could be one
we see a little bit. Because didn't that happen in the last game or one of the last games when Eddie came on and he played up front and Jesus moved out wide? Whereas all season when Eddie came on, he was the guy who stayed wide and Jesus was in the middle.
Zinchenko in midfield?
Possible.
I mean, you know, I'm not sure you can quite call that repurposing because it's so obviously his natural position. Keep your left back. If Thomas Partey, do you think we'd see more of him in that right back role?
Don't think so. I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised. I think that was very much a case of needs must at the end of the season. What they wanted to do was see Kivior at left back rather than at right center half. So how do you move Kivior to left back when you don't have another right-sided center back or you don't have another right back? And I think Partey was just a little bit part of that jigsaw, if you like.
I think Smith Rowe in midfield would be the one. And I know that he... Because I sometimes have this thing with Smith Rowe where I'm like, well, he's really not Martin Odegaard. You know, he's a very... I know that they were at one point in kind of direct competition to be the number 10, but I think they're very different players. And I always thought of Odegaard as an on-the-ball player and Smith Rowe as an off-the-ball guy, someone who could make great runs, you know, in behind and great timing, great finishing. And actually, when you think about Xhaka's role last season, a lot of it was about that. It was a much lower touch role than we'd seen Xhaka in previously. A lot of it was making those runs, providing width, getting into the box at the right time. And those are all things Smith Rowe can do. So I'll say that.
All right.
Let's say that.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Yeah, okay. Have you got one?
Tom Clark says, any thoughts on the controversial away kit that is soon to come out?
I mean, it looks like absolute shit. I'm sorry. I think Adidas have like continuously knocked it out of the park when it comes to our kit since they took over again. But I don't understand this sort of Microsoft Paint approach to the away kit. Maybe, sure. Maybe when you see it on the players, I don't know. I often feel that about kits. It's like, oh, I'm not sure about that. Not sure if that's good. And then you see it on the players and it looks good. But I'm not convinced that's going to happen.
Yeah, they look good when we win in them. That's for sure. I think... So I've been told that it's kind of viewed as sort of a potential festival shirt. You know, something that you could see...
At Glastonbury, etc.
There is sort of a market for that, I think. But it's pretty niche. And I think it's for people, I hesitate to say Andrew, but a little bit younger than you and I.
Who's playing at Glastonbury this year?
Elton John.
Elton John?
Is it Elton John?
It is Elton John. I've just looked at it. Hang on a minute. Saturday, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
and
okay,
Elton
maybe it's
John.
Not for people yet.
Yeah.
But listen, I think Glastonbury
Rick Astley
is a bit older than a lot of festivals.
Rick Astley.
But say at Wireless, you know,
right,
or wherever, I think there might be kids wearing that away shirt. But I don't. I can't see a world in which I can pull that off, to be honest.
I don't think so. The new home kit looked good on you, I have to say.
Yep.
Did look
we'll
good.
We'll stick to that. Right, I think we did well there, Andrew.
I think we did. We had a big question about the Saliba contract thing. Do you want to do it just very quickly, or is that just, are we just repeating ourselves?
Okay, let's do it, but we've got to give a one-word answer.
Okay. DJC, who's at It's DJC. I believe he's also playing at Glastonbury this year because they're having anyone, basically.
He's too young for that.
He said, do you think Saliba's camp are just playing the negotiation game, or could there possibly be some sour feelings for the way he was treated, loans, not deemed ready, etc., and therefore not jumping to sign a renewal, even though he looks quite happy? So is it just negotiation, or is there something else?
Oh, it's so hard to do in one answer. One word, rather. My one word is possibly. I suppose what I would say is I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. I think that some deals are easier to do than other deals. Arsenal have been talking to Saliba and talking about negotiating that contract and doing that contract for a long time now. And in that time, they have done deals with other players. They have done a deal with Gabriel Martinelli. They have done a deal with Bukayo Saka, with Aaron Ramsdale, possibly with Gabriel as well. That may have been even done before that. Some contracts are easier to do than others, and there are all sorts of reasons for that. And one of those reasons is relationship and trust. And I think it would be reasonable of Saliba and his camp to not be as trusting and as on great terms with the club as certain other players, because there were periods of time where his treatment or the management of his situation was less than ideal. So I think it is a negotiation. Money solves all problems. But I think there might be players and agents that Arsenal could do this deal quicker with, you know?
Sure.
So I think they kind of go hand in hand. What do you think?
I think Mikel Arteta and Edu should stand outside William Saliba's house and sing him an Elton John song.
Yeah.
Can you feel the love? Can you feel the love tonight?
Sorry seems to be the hardest word, but okay. Can you feel the love tonight? Yeah, that's better.
That from The Lion King. That doesn't have any tragedy in it
as
at all.
As a duet.
Yeah.
I can see what's happening. What? And they don't have a clue. He'll run it down and go to PSG on a free. Yeah.
I mean, that's our only chance. That's our only chance. Well, sorry, we couldn't answer that question definitively and happily for everybody, but it is one of those situations where I think we're all going to be slightly on tenterhooks until something definitive happens. No doubt it's a question that we'll return to over the course of the summer. For now, though, I think we should leave it all there because I'm still shocked that Elton John is going to be headlining Glastonbury. Then again, David Bowie headlined Glastonbury.
That's not the same
it's
thing,
not
mate.
It's the same. No, David Bowie's much more akin to Glastonbury than Elton John, who should be just doing, like, Las Vegas.
I know, right?
Yeah?
Well, I think he's retiring, Elton John. I think he is.
They never retire. They just keep
He's been
going,
on his retirement tour for about
this is the last time I'm playing
years.
My hits. And then, like, 17 years later, they're still fucking...
Yeah. Crocodile Rock this. Comes out again.
Fucking Crocodile Rock. I hate that song. Really do. But so you're going to Glastonbury. That's
I'm
what
going
you're
to
saying.
Glastonbury is what
going
I'm saying.
To Glastonbury, wearing the Arsenal away kit. Well, you have a great time.
Thank you. When he does Can You Feel the Love Tonight, I've got Saliba on the back of my away kit.
Awesome.
Lighters are up.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right. We will leave it there for now. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being with us. We'll have more for you during the week. For now, we'll leave it there. Until the next one, take it easy, folks. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.